The following session is from the 2016 NCHE Thrive Homeschool Conference. For additional recordings, visit nche.com.
Welcome. It's good to see you here. Glad you came all the way down the road. I'm going to pray for us before we get going. Father, we're grateful for a chance to be together. We do thank you for this conference and the privilege that you give us to hear good information and grow. We thank you for the people that we meet, the information that we hear. Most of all, we thank you for the opportunity to love and train our children, and we thank you that you give us the grace and power that we need to accomplish that. We ask, Lord, that you would use this session and this time to further equip and strengthen us for that purpose. And we give it to you and thank you that you can, in Jesus' name. Amen. I did a session in which I advertised this session. Didn't work very well, but there was a person. I was seeing if she was here because a lady came up after and asked me a very interesting question. I've never had this question asked after a session. She said, "I have a six-year-old, and he wants to learn about underground drains. You know, like under the street, drainage. What do I do?" I didn't laugh. I just said, "Go to the library and get some books about underground drains." And, you know, I mean, like Richard Scarry, you guys know Lowly the Worm and Richard Scarry books? How cool those underground drain street gets. Get him some books to look at. And if he can read, let him read some books. She said, "I don't know anything about underground drains." I said, "You don't have to know anything about what you teach your kids." And this really shows the power of what we're about to learn. And it's the old, you can give your kid, in this case, a fish, or you can teach him to fish scenario. Because you don't want to have to sign up for spoon-feeding your child every piece of information that they need. Not only do you not want to sign up for that because it's impossible, but you can't follow them through the rest of their life, right? They have to be able to do it themselves. And I want my children, when they go out from my direct mentorship, I hope they always call me. I still call my dad. But they're still going to have to learn things on their own. And as they do that, I want them to feel totally confident that when they encounter something that they don't understand or that they don't know, that they know what to do. And here's the difference. When they're going through life and they have a tool belt of whatever I taught them, okay, and they come to a door that they can't get through and they need to unlock it, and they're digging through all their keys, right? Like, well, where's the key for this door? Did I get this piece of information in school? Did mom and dad teach me this? And I have to tell you, there are some doors I got to in life. I was like some stuff about girls. I came to this door and I was like, "What, Dad, why didn't you tell me this? I mean, it would have helped." Or this other door. But I want them to be able to reach in and get out the skeleton key, all right? They don't need a key for every door, right? A piece of knowledge for everything that they have to do. They want the skeleton key that says, "I can learn anything, any skill, and any knowledge that exists, I know how to get it. I know how to learn it." So what if you don't teach your kids, I mean, you won't be able to teach them all the information that they need, but what if you give them this powerful skill? To learn anything, any skill, any piece of knowledge. And that's basically the main point of what we're talking about for raising lifelong learners. In a minute, I'm going to introduce this book and we're going to go through it. But I have three kind of assumptions, foundations for why this is important as we go forward. And here's the first one. You'll not be able to teach all the facts and skills your children will need for life before they leave home. I kind of already said that. If you came to my last session, I see a couple of you out there. I want to draw your attention to a pie chart. You'll have to do this again in your mind, those of you guys who are there. Imagine a pie chart that contains inside of it all of your working knowledge. Okay? This is all the stuff you know, not all the stuff you learned, but all the stuff you actually know and use. Okay? Knowledge that you use. That's working knowledge. And I want you to decide how much of that knowledge you learned before 12th grade that you're actually using, okay? I assume some of it. But my discovery is a miserably small piece of that pie of my working knowledge actually came before I graduated from high school. I would be willing to throw in college. You can have college too. How much of your working knowledge, did your pie get very much bigger? I hope it got a little bit bigger, but maybe it didn't. A lot of people have their career and their field, and you ask them what was their major, and it has nothing to do with what they're doing. So many people. So again, you can see what the point of this is. You have to teach your children how to learn. You cannot give them all the information they're going to need. And for some reason, somehow, there are a lot of people, and I think it's kind of a public school mindset, where we've taken an educational philosophy and tried to put it into home education. But there's a mindset that we have this huge pressure to teach for the test and get all specific government-sanctioned, decreed pieces of information into their heads before the time limit goes out or you failed. And so moms and dads are going around with a significant level of anxiety and fear. I'm going to ruin my kid. I'm not going to get all the information. And if I don't teach them all the way through Algebra 2, they're going to be a criminal. And just like, and there's this stress and there's this fear of this quota of information that has to be taking place. It's just not true. Now, I'm not going to be downplaying knowledge, okay? Because what do we want to do? We want to get more and more of it for the rest of our lives. It's just that we don't have to put ourselves under an unrealistic pressure that isn't the way it really is. So, and by the way, and this is where the transition between my two sessions ends, if that's a new idea for you and you're going, wait a minute, that's what I was trying to do, then you need a new educational philosophy and you need to go get the audio of my last session. Because if that's what you were doing, then you need to figure out what you need to do, because that's not what you need to be doing. We have a different purpose and mission for education. So one of the other things I mentioned, though, and you all can relate to this with the same idea of how many people, like I already told on my dad, I'll have to say something else about my dad. My dad has written, he's a professor, and he teaches, and he's written lots of books on his subject. And he's Dr. McDill. But you ask him, what's your PhD in? It's not even his PhD is in his field. Okay, and you go to Google. I told the chair of the computer science department, Appalachian State's a good friend of mine, and he goes to the Google place in Lenore and says, what are you guys looking for? You know, and the first couple of things are, can you get along well with others? And can you learn fast? You know, the computer stuff wasn't on the two, you know, the top two stuff. And I'm sure that helps, but if you understand what I'm saying, when you finish your education, then you get a job and they train you to do a specialized field. So once again, you understand this is how real life works. We need our educational philosophy to match what real life is. And if we're coming out of a public school mindset, we're not thinking right. We have to think differently. So here's the next main idea here. You can teach your children how to learn on their own. I spoke to homeschool graduate, pretty recent homeschool graduate, and I was just explaining how a homeschool graduate, when they're finished with their specific orderly education, then they should feel like this. Ah, now I can go learn and read whatever I want. Because nobody's saying you have to learn this stuff. And I've had all of these books and all of these areas and fields that I just can't wait to dig into. And now I can really start my education because I'm free to pursue my calling or pursue my passion, right? Because I don't have to finish X amount of this. And I said, what a great attitude, you know, you homeschoolers can have. He said, or the other attitude that you know, kids have when they graduate from school is, oh, phew, I'm glad I'm done learning stuff. Now I can just get to work. That's really what people think. And that's not real, is it? And kids graduate, oh, now I can just go get a job. Now I can go. And the learning thing, you know, now I don't have to read books and learn. And this, unfortunately, this homeschool, this young man I was talking to, like this light bulb went off in his head. He had been thinking, even as a homeschool graduate, he had been thinking, oh, well, I finished that part of life, and now I'm moving on to work or to doing something else. And besides wisdom and spiritual maturity, which is one of the main missions that I just talked about in a basic educational strategy, aside from teaching your children wisdom and spiritual maturity, one of the next most important things you can teach them is this. So it's way, way up there for me, how to be a lifelong learner. Let's look at these verses right here, Proverbs 15:14 and Proverbs 18:15. Proverbs 15:14. The heart of him who has understanding seeks knowledge, but the mouths of fools feeds on folly. There's a difference between knowledge and understanding, isn't there? Knowledge is data and facts. Understanding is wisdom. You understand the whys and the hows, not just that something is. And this is a very important distinction that we're going to dig into deeper as we go along. But look at this. This is about appetites. Okay, the heart of him who has understanding seeks knowledge. So if you've given a child wisdom, because you could teach them to learn, but what if they don't want to learn? Now, one of the things that we want to establish isn't just do I know how to learn, but I hunger for knowledge. I hunger to know more and to grow and to be deeper and stronger and more wise. Or do we have people who are satisfied? Well, I know enough. I know what I need to know. I'm good. You know, do we have teachable, open, hungry people? And if you've given them wisdom, spiritual maturity, they're going to be hungry for knowledge. What about fools? The mouths of fools feed on folly. And here's one thing I'm asking my question. What are my children's appetites? What are they hungering for? And I don't like it when my kids are, they're busy and they're doing stuff, and all of a sudden they have this lull in time and they get a little bored. What do they go to? I don't want to play a game. I just want to get on the computer. I want to play a game. I want to go do something fun. You know? And all of a sudden, I begin, as they try to fill the holes of their life, you know what their appetites are. And sometimes I'm not very pleased with the appetites I see growing in my children. I'm asking myself the question, how do I give them a hunger for God, a hunger for knowledge, a hunger for wisdom, hunger for growing themselves and expanding and preparing and doing powerful, awesome things for God instead of, I want to play a video game. Like, oh, no, you don't. Come on. There's so much more in life. So what appetites do we have? What about Proverbs 18:15? An intelligent heart acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. Again, it's the same thing. But something to chew on later is an intelligent heart. Just chew on that later. What is an intelligent heart? Not an intelligent mind, but an intelligent heart. That sounds like wisdom or something deeper than just understanding something. So here's the big deal about learning by yourself. Can you learn something without a teacher, without someone holding your hand, without a school, without a worksheet, right? Can you do it yourself? That's what we're talking about. You can teach your kids to learn on their own. That's the main point here. Here's the last foundational principle. Learning to read books is the most important way to become a lifelong learner. Learning to read books. And I do say books. I would say reading in general. If you really want to press me on it, I'll say, okay, reading anything. But I am going to focus on books. Learning to read books is one of the best ways, and I would say the best way, to teach your children to read. I mean, to be lifelong learners. Does anybody read Louis L'Amour? Anybody like Westerns and stuff? I love Louis L'Amour. I read that. And I was reading The Walking Drum. And if you know, this is one of his big epic ones, you know. And one of the things I love about Louis L'Amour is a lot of times his cowboys, The Walking Drum isn't a cowboy one, but a lot of times his heroes are also scholars. And they love reading the classics. And they carry around, you know, Plutarch or something in their saddlebag. And it's so cool because he's kind of a philosopher. But they're actually, I just read him because it's like reading a movie. You know, I just like the Western and the action. But I was challenged by these scholars and the books they were reading. And I thought, man, they're reading these classics, you know, the timeless books. And I thought, you know, I was a homeschool kid. I didn't read classics. I didn't, you know, and I'm like, I want my kids to read classics. And, you know, if you go to a homeschool conference like this, you can find some book list nerds, right? Or like, hey, give me a book list. You got a book list? Like, what are the good books? And we're looking for a book list because we don't know. I don't know. I didn't read good books. And so I went online and I start reading, you know, what are the great books? And I'm just, what, great books, you know, what are the great books? And I want to tell you, that is how I found this book, How to Read a Book. Anybody heard of How to Read a Book? A couple of people, yeah. Last session. Has it? Somebody bought it? Oh, was it in the vendor hall? That's great. I should have brought a box myself. Anybody want to buy a book? Man, I missed an opportunity right there. So I found this book because in the back of this book is a book list. That's one of the interesting parts of this book. Like almost 200 great books, the books of Western civilization. It's a big, important book list. I was like, wow. So I found the book and then I read this book. And I want to tell you, this book was transformational to me. And it was a big deal. And I want to tell you, That says a lot because I have already been in school for most of my whole life. And I did my bachelor's degree, and then I did a master's degree, and then I did another master's degree, and then I did a PhD, and I still didn't know how to read a book. Like at the end, doing my dissertation, I finally started to do some of this. Oh, and by the way, my field is in the area of my doctorate. Isn't that cool? I escaped that one. So, and so what I'm suggesting to you is that you don't know how to read a book. And that's why right off the bat, when I would say something like teaching your children to read is the best way to, you know, read books is the best way to teach them to be lifelong learners. It's like, well, that's easy. They already know how to read. No, that's not what we're talking about. And the rest of the session focuses on this skill, which is the most important way to be a lifelong learner. All right? So this is what we're going to unpack. This book is written by Mortimer J. Adler. Mortimer Adler and Charles Van Doren. This was originally written in the 40s, okay? And then it was rewritten, modified, updated in the 70s. And this is still what it is. I mean, this is still the version from the 70s, the classic guide to intelligent reading. I forgot to keep going. You can see that's one version that you might find online. Most of them, and mine looks like this. So they have a lot of different versions. It's just as long as you get the author, there's so many printings of this. It really is the classic. There are other kind of books, how to read, but this is the classic that you want to get. Mortimer Adler. So here's a quote. I'm going to read it for you since you probably can't see that. Oh, and by the way, I should have told you this. Sorry. There's going to be a lot on this screen from henceforth, and I have a way for you to download the notes for this whole thing. So if you get to the point where you're like, okay, I just need to listen, I can't write all this, then you'll be able, I'll tell you later more about it, but you can go to my website, truthtofreedom.org, and there's a tab at the top that says Thrive. So that's for this conference, and if you click on the tab Thrive on truthtofreedom.org, you will find this session and be able to download the notes. Everything that's on this screen will be in the notes, plus a few more quotes and different things. So you'll be able to get that if you need it. So this is the quote from the book. Our continuing education depends mainly on books alone, read without a teacher's help. Therefore, if we are disposed to go on learning and discovering, we must know how to make books teach us well. So this is a thesis of his book, is if you want to be a continuing learner, you have to understand the skill that this book contains. Ultimately, I'm going to give you my opinion. I'm going to boil down and give you seven of the best things I learned from this book that you can immediately apply without reading this book. Okay? You don't have to read this book to apply the things that I'm going to tell you. However, I still recommend this. This, if you want the real deal and to go deep, you're going to see I'm not going to be able to cover it all. Now, I will make one comment about books versus other media, okay? We can learn through any kind of information, can't we? And so the skill of reading in this way that we're about to cover applies to any reading, even a newspaper article, okay? It applies to anything. But I think you understand that the kind of reading that this generation of children are doing isn't heavy reading, right? It's Twitter reading. It's little short snippets of reading. It's Facebook reading. It's, you know, articles online and different things like that. That's just the major form of consumption. And so you can get a digital book. That's fine too. However, in books, we have something different, okay? We have the level of understanding and knowledge that's being presented that helps us grow so much deeper, okay? And all of the other kind of research is great, and all the little stuff is helpful. But that is not the same as books and research, okay? So I think you understand that, but that's why I'm going to focus on books particularly. All right, so let's dig in, and I'm going to give you, seven main lessons and principles from this book of how to read a book. And the first is learn to read for understanding. So according to Adler, there are three purposes of reading: entertainment, knowledge, and understanding. Entertainment's easy, right? For me, that's Louis L'Amour. I just read cool Westerns. There's a lot of books I read just for fun. I enjoy that. And that's not to minimize that literature and its value for our lives. But that's just not what we're talking about right now. Knowledge. What is knowledge? Well, I read a newspaper article, right? I look up on YouTube or wherever, how do I get this stain, or how do I get this thing out of my kid's hair? I don't even know what that is in his hair, you know? It's like, how do I do something? And so you look up stuff, and that's knowledge, okay? Understanding is different, okay? Because There's the difference between knowledge and understanding, as we talked about before, is kind of like the difference between a fact and understanding the significance or rightness or wrongness of that fact. Here's another quote that's not on there, but again, it's on the notes. To be informed is to know simply that something is the case. This is knowledge. To be enlightened is to know, in addition, what it is all about, why it is the case, what its connections are with other facts, in what respects it is the same, in what respects it is different, and so forth. And so we're talking about understanding being different. So I can understand historical facts. Don't you teach your kids historical facts? So-and-so ruled at such and such a time in such a country and won this war and blah, blah, blah. And you can have all these facts. And those are facts. But does that mean a child understands the significance of those facts? And so we have the famous Lord Acton quote, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's not a fact, is it? It's based on historical reflection. That's why you know all you look at history, and so that's the difference. What about a fact? Here's a recent fact. The Supreme Court rules, right, that marriage is now officially, according to the United States Supreme Court, doesn't have to be between a man and a woman. That's a fact, right? Now I know the fact. But here's a question. What's the significance of that? What's the historical importance of that? What's the moral importance of that? What's the importance of that for the church? As we look in history, what are the repercussions of this? That is way bigger than knowing a fact, okay? And so we can read stuff to get knowledge, to get facts, but we're talking about, right now, we're talking about this. Learn to read for understanding. We're looking for something much bigger, okay? And this is going to get developed more as we go along. So here's a common mistake. A common mistake is we start reading a book, and then we go, oh, I don't really get this. I don't really understand, you know. Wow, boy, I really don't get this. Well, I don't get this. So let me find a different book that I get. Okay? And Mortimer Adler says, you just put down the book you need if you want to grow in understanding. If you read something and the only thing you're getting out of it is knowledge, because you know it's easy to understand, then you're not expanding and challenging your understanding. Because you need ideas and thoughts and relationships of ideas that make your brain have to be bigger than it is. Okay? And that's what the rest of this is about. How can I tackle those kinds of books? And I don't want my kids to be like that. I know most, honestly, almost everybody's like that. I don't get that. That book's hard. Chunk. Right? And I'm just telling you, if you want your children to be lifelong learners, then they won't do that. They will not set aside a book because they don't get it, because it's hard. Instead, it's going to be like a challenge. I found a book I don't get. Yes. I'm going for this. This is going to blow my brain out. I love that. I want it to be bigger and better, you know? I'm going to take this challenge. You find a mountain that you can't climb, so what do? I'm going to climb it. And that's a different kind of attitude. Learn to choose the best books is next. Learn to choose the best books. So here is one of the most important theses of this book. And that is, most books are not worth reading. The way vast majority of books aren't worth reading. So this is the second reason we don't read. The first reason is we don't get books, and so we put them down because they're hard. Here's the second reason. We start reading and go, this is stupid, or this is useless, or this is boring. You know, I mean, we just, and here's the fact, it is. Most books aren't worth reading. And I want to tell you, probably, this is my favorite point. This is my favorite thing that I learned from this book, because I don't have time to waste reading books that aren't worth reading. And the way that we normally read, and we're going to unpack this in a minute, forces us to at least read parts of books that are not worth reading. And so how do I do that? And the skill that comes out of this that I love the most is the skill of being able to pick the books that I should read before I actually have to read the book. And how are we going to do that? And so I want to tell you, according to this, that there are four levels of reading. One is elementary. The next is inspectional or superficial reading. We'll talk about that more. That's actually where we're going to sit mostly. Next is analytical reading. And the final is syntopical reading. Elementary reading is, can you read words? Right? Superficial reading is what we're about to talk about, and that is, do I know how to assess a book or read it quickly without spending a whole lifetime trying to read a book? And I'm going to have to explain that more. Analytical reading is, you found a great book, it's going to blow your brain out, and you're going to have to really work hard on it. How do I do that? How do I seriously grasp and retain and process a good book? And then syntopical reading is research, okay? Syntopical reading is when I am comparing and I have a question and I need to process lots of different sources and books. Do I know how to get the information out of those sources, critique those sources, compare those sources, right? And come to a good conclusion about what do the best sources say about my question? That's syntopical, and you have to go through these because they're in order. And so let's go to the idea of inspectional or superficial reading. And this is, again, how do I find out how to read a book, decide to read a book? Oh, I didn't know I had that on there. So we have, those are the four I just told you. Again, you can get the notes. Let you look at that for a minute. Okay, this may seem really elementary, and I know some people actually do this, but most people don't. What do most people do to read a book? They go, huh, that looks interesting. I think I'll read this book. They look at the cover, and they go, I think I'm going to read this book. I know that author, or that's a cool title. And then they go to, let's see, preface, nah. Part one, introduction, nah. First chapter, right? I mean, we just want to go. Okay, here we go. Chapter one. First word. This is a book for readers, and this is how we read a book, right? We just start reading. That's how most people read. I'm going to read this page, and I'm going to turn the page. Then I'm going to read this page. And then you're going to go, oh, this is kind of hard. Or you're going to go, I don't know if this, you know, this is dumb. And you... Okay, so this is different. Don't do that. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to read the titles, the subtitles, and the preface that I just skipped. Okay? You're going to read them carefully. And remember, I'm not trying to read a book. I'm trying to decide if this book is worth reading. I'm trying to decide if it's worth my time. Okay? Then I'm going to look at and read the table of contents. Now, most books today have almost useless tables of contents. If you've read some great books, the old books, they have really amazing tables of contents. Like they have this super detailed outline. And you can actually get this amazing idea of the book by looking at the table of contents. And that's still true. And of course, he does it because he knows what a great book looks like. And so you can look at the table of contents. It's pages and pages. But if you read that, what have you just done? Wow, you have a pretty interesting grasp of the book itself. Then look at the index. I mean, seriously, who does that? Oh, sure, I'm going to flip through the index of this book, you know. And what's interesting is you get a grasp of the topics and authors and books that are mentioned in the text. This is helpful for you to understand the nature, the quality of the book, and the kinds of things that it's going to cover. The publisher's blurb, all right? So if you have a cover or the back of it, and it explains what the book's about and all that, it's actually helpful. It will actually give you the center, the core of what the book is. And then chapters that seem to be pivotal to its argument. So you look at the title, you look at the thesis, you look at the table of contents, and you go, and as you look at the table of contents in the chapters, you're going to be able to go, that chapter is important. Because that's where he lands. Like, this is the important part. Often that's the conclusion, isn't it? Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But you're able to assess that. And you go to that chapter, and then you kind of flip through that chapter. Look at the headings. Read the introduction in the last paragraph of that important chapter. Okay? And then he says this, thumb through the book, looking for signs of the main contention. Above all, do not fail to read the last two or three pages. Okay? That's not how we read. Some people do, and that's they've been intuitive or they've been taught how to read well. But if you want to decide whether to read a book, read the last three pages. Now, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go, okay, I don't need this book. This book isn't what I thought it was. Or you're going to say, wow, this is really exactly what I'm looking for. Or, you know, you're going to be able to make an assessment of the book without wasting your time, you know, actually reading the book. I don't know if you've had this experience, but, you know, I used to read the regular old-fashioned way and go, oh, this is hard. Put it over here. Oh, this is dumb. Put it over here. And all of a sudden, I have 12 books on my nightstand that I haven't finished. And do you ever go around with the weight and the guilt of, I haven't finished a whole book in 5 years, you know, because I can't even pay attention long enough, or there's no good books, or I don't know. And it's like this guilt. And then your friend comes up and here's a great book. No, I don't read books. I don't take books. I don't take book recommendations because I just, you know, and you have this, and this is scary even for us supposedly kind of, you know, educated people. And that is so many people just don't read and they're intimidated. And I want to tell you something, even though I've done all this education and all my, reading and all this stuff, I really did get to a point where I was struggling with reading things just that weren't for school, you know, and how do I do that? And now there's an interesting confidence that I have that when someone recommends a book, I say, great, I'll check that out because I know how in about 10 minutes. I'm not going to feel obligated because my best friend said you should read that book. Oh, I have to read the whole, you know. No, I'm going to decide whether I'm going to read that book, and I'm going to make an accurate or intelligent assessment of whether I should read that book. Is it something I need? Is it something that fits my life at this time? Is it a good book? Is it a quality book? Does it have a worldview or perspective that I can appreciate? Or does it have something that challenges the way I think, and I need to be challenged on that point? And so you're asking yourself that question, and you're making an informed decision. So I'm telling you, this one point right here about choosing the best books has been very liberating. And so this isn't just something, of course, you can benefit from, which of course it is, but you want your children not to be intimidated by books, but be able to process them and know how to assess them and feel confident about that. So here's the next one. Learn to read superficially. That sounds pretty bad, doesn't it? Superficial, you know, of course, generally has a negative connotation. And I'm not going to try to think of a different word than Mortimer Adler uses, but that's his idea of a superficial reading. And so I want to explain what that is, okay? And here's a definition from the book. In tackling a difficult book for the first time, read it through without ever stopping to look up or ponder the things you do not understand right away. Do not stop to wrestle with things you don't understand. This is not how I read. This is not counterintuitive. In fact, the other day, I was looking up a picture of how to read a book, and some little blurb came up that was just a really old-fashioned article or something on how to read a book. And I saw it, and it said, stop every time you don't know the word and look it up in the dictionary. Okay, and then I realized, wow, that is the traditional. If you don't know the word, stop. And here, interesting, he says, don't do that. And then a few pages later, he says, this is the most important rule of all. We're not reading the right way. Okay, now why is this? So here's what he's saying. Once you found a good book, just fly through it. Just plow through it. Read it as fast as your brain can handle it. And if you don't understand it, don't worry about it. Just keep going. And so he explains why. We were taught, oh, I'm sorry. First of all, here's the first reason. And this has been amazingly true, not only for me, but for the people that I've been able to, you know, give this advice to. When they're having a hard time understanding a book, they get a hold of a part of the book or a part of the concept and the idea that they don't understand. And they wrestle with that part, and they wrestle with that part, and they wrestle with that part. And you know what the assumption is? I've seen this so many times. Here's what they say. If I don't get this part, I can't keep reading because I won't understand the next part. It's sequential, right? And so they stop. But here's the important idea, and that is if I get a really good idea of the whole, here's what happens invariably. I go back to that part and go, oh, I get it. You will understand the parts way better after you get a picture of the whole. And if it's a book that's worth reading, this is really hard. This is where we resist. And I told this to my wife. I said, this is how we read. That's not how I read. I know it's not how you read, but it's how you need to read. I'm not going to read like that. You know, she's really, and I was like, why not? You're going to understand that I'm not going to read it twice. I don't read it twice. I'm going to read a book one time. I don't have time to read it twice. And you know what I say? You don't have time to not read it twice. You think you're saving time. But if you will read the whole book as fast as you can, if it's a book worth reading, and if it really has something that's going to change your life or be significant to you, then you're going to get the whole and you're going to go back. And then you're going to read it, and light bulbs and explosions are going to be going off all over the place. This is amazing. I'm getting this. Okay, that's the first reason. Here's another reason. This is a quote from the book. Even if you never go back, okay, let's say you plow through a great book. Even if you never go back, understanding half of a really tough book is much better than not understanding it at all, which will be the case if you allow yourself to be stopped by the first difficult passage you come to. It is better to understand half of a great book than understanding none of it. And I'm telling you, this is true. I have benefited from not reading a whole great book analytically or thoroughly. But I have a grasp of that author, of their ideas, of what they are trying to wrestle with. And I'm actually a more educated person because I'm aware of that book. And maybe I didn't really understand the whole thing, but I understood half of it. I'm better off. Then what if I just chunked it when I came to that first part, you know, that I didn't get? Okay, here's one last reason that I think this is a great strategy. And I'll tell you the title of the book. My mom recommended a little book, spiritual growth type of book called Praying the Bible. And I would recommend it. So for your spiritual walk, your devotions, it's really an amazing thing, but I will not talk about that. Praying the Bible. So it's just this little book. And my mom gave it to me. I said, oh, thanks. So I remember sitting out on the porch at my in-law's house and like, okay, I'm going to superficially read this book. I already decided to read it, okay? But now I'm going to just fly through it. So I sat there, and this is the kind of book, and here's what's amazing to me now. It's unbelievable how fast I can read a book because of going through this process. And so I just plowed through the book, sitting there on the porch. And it was very liberating. In fact, liberating. I thought, this is great. I can just read a book because I know what I'm doing. I know where I am in this process. And when I finished that book, sitting right there, it was a significant contribution to my life. But do you know what else? I said, I don't need to read that again. Normally, I would have taken days and days to read that book because that's how you read. You just have to read it real slow and think about that chapter for a week and all this kind of stuff. I just read it. And then I got what I wanted out of it and I put it away. I said, that was good. I don't need to read that. And somehow, you know these guys who, I mean, there are some people out there like, oh yeah, I read 12 books this week. And you're like, no, you didn't. Yeah, I did. Yeah, they did. No, you can. I mean, do you see what I'm saying? What they're processing, their capacity to process a book and that information is real. And I just went right through that. And again, it was liberating. I thought, man, I can read a lot more books. Because this didn't challenge my understanding. You know what I'm saying? It was kind of informational. I got a couple of ideas and it reminded me of things I knew. And it was very important that I read that book, but I didn't need to read it again. And you may have that situation. And you didn't have to read it, okay? So this is what we call superficial reading. And remember this. He says, this is the most important rule. This is not how we read. But I want to encourage you to teach your children, all right, this process, how to read a book. And it's not going to be easy. And most of this, you know, isn't till, you know, you're talking about high schoolers. You're talking about people who are old enough, your children are old enough to really process this stuff. All right, let's keep going. Learn when to read slow and when to read fast. One of the big issues, right, is speed reading. And you think you read 12 books this week? Wow, you must be a speed reader. Right? Speed reading, that's how I, and oh, if I could just read faster and all that kind of stuff. Interesting, I love that he says, no, that's not really the trick. There are times that you need to read fast, and there are times that you need to read slow. Okay? So, here's when you need to read fast. First, when you're doing a superficial read. Right? We just talked about that. When you're doing a superficial read, read it as fast as you can. Literally, just plow through it. Here's the other time. And this happens all the time. There are parts of books that you already get. Right? You come to this point and he starts telling a story for an analogy and you're like, I know where he's going with this. Just go. Just forget it. Skip it. Or there's a certain chapter and you already read a different book about that. You already understand that chapter. Well, just blow through it really fast. Okay. When do you read slow? Two times. First is even when you're doing a superficial read or anytime you're just trying to work through a book, when you get to that point, and your brain goes, what? Then stop. Read it again. Read it again. Dissect it. Pull it apart. Look up that word. There are times you should do that. You should look up that word, right? And you should find out what it means. And so there are times that you just have to stop. If it's a good book, there are times you have to slow down. And you have to read really carefully and slowly. And so the only other thing I'm going to mention about this is that it is possible to read faster than you do. And of course, he has this very amazing, simple little thing. First of all, he helps you understand that the reason you read slow isn't because of your brain, it's because of your eyes. And the way we learn to read is so spatially oriented. And we read each word. And we think that, you know, that's how you have to read. But if you are read silently, by the way, I love reading out loud too, especially if you, this is a lost art, reading out loud. And I think reading out loud is a really important thing to do. And a lot of times when I slow down because I really want to get something, I read it to myself. I read it out loud. So I hear the words coming back into my head and I'm processing them. But if I'm just reading in my brain and I have to release myself from the assumption that my brain only goes as fast as my eyes, because that's not true. And we don't actually read like that. What happens once you learn how to read is as soon as you get to the beginning of that word, you already recognize that word. You don't sound it out. You already know it. You just know the word. And so here's the point. If you can just get your eyes to move faster, you'll read faster. So he says, just get your pointer out, put it on the line, and run your finger across the line faster than is comfortable for your eyes. But here's what you're going to understand. Your brain can do it. And all of a sudden, if you force yourself to move your eyes across faster, then you realize, hey, my brain's getting this. You can actually push yourself a little bit more and a little bit more and go a little bit faster. So anyway, that was just an interesting little tip that you can train yourself very simply to read faster as long as you understand that your brain can consume information way faster than your eyes think it can. So something to think about. Okay, the last thing about reading slow or fast that's so important is to remember that the main point is comprehension. You're not trying to read a book. You're trying to understand a book, right? That reminds me of the time I was vacuuming when I was a kid doing chores, and I was vacuuming the living room. Just all over the place. And my mom walked up and watched me. What are you doing? I'm vacuuming. Why? I'm just vacuuming. That's my job. That's my chore. He said, no, that's not why you're doing that. You're doing it to get the floor clean. Oh, and it's like, this changes everything, right? It changes the way that I do this. This is such a, you know, but the point is, and so many kids are, you know, I finished my homework. I finished my math. And especially one of my kids. I don't know what's in his brain, and I don't know where the information that he's putting in there goes. But he finishes history, he finishes whatever, he just finishes it. And then you ask him a question, what did you read? I don't know. You just read it. Because he had his little list of things he had to read, and he saw, I have to read pages 10 through 20. Okay, I read it, check, sweet. Next, read it, check, awesome, okay, I did that. And he read it. And he's not understanding anything that he's reading. He's not retaining it. He has no idea why he's reading it. And so the purpose of reading fast or slow, you always have to remember, I'm trying to understand this. All right, next is learn to write in your book. So a lot of people do this, and that's fine. But I find it to be one of the most helpful things to do, to write in your book. And I want to show you his little outline just very quickly. Underline major points, circle words, do stars next to really important stuff. Create your own little code system, you know, cross-reference stuff. You can see that online later. But there's a lot of things you can do to write, summarize stuff, and make your arguments in the side part. And I think this is really a fantastic part of engaging a book. And you know what this means? If you found a great book, buy it and put your name in it and get your pen out and own it. And he says you don't own your book until you've put your thoughts in the book, you know? And so really take, if it's a good book, make it your book. You know, and somebody else looks at it and goes, I don't want to read it with all this stuff. Good, that's my book. That's my thoughts. Those are my arguments, you know? And it's such an awesome way to go. I want to get to the last one here because we're running out of time. Learn to read analytically. This is what, you know, honestly, the big bulk of this is about analytical reading. And once again, you're just going to have to look at this. I did not intend at all for us to go through this, okay? But you can see there are three main points. Number one, finding what a good book is about. 2, interpreting a book's contents, and 3, criticizing a book, which means you're going to come to a conclusion. There's a whole awesome section in this book on critical thinking, okay? And how do I process this information? The section on critical thinking is its own value, to teach critical thinking and how to process information and how to critique that. Here's another quote to start wrapping it up. Good books are over your head. They would not be good for you if they were not. And books that are over your head weary you unless you can reach up to them and pull yourself up to their level. It is not the stretching that tires you, but the frustration of stretching unsuccessfully because you lack the skill to stretch effectively. To keep on reading actively, you must have not only the will to do so, but also the skill, the art that enables you to elevate yourself by mastering what at first sight seems to be beyond you. This is the skill that you want to teach. And at this point, I can't give you all the information in this book, and I really want to recommend it to you. Let me tell you something, okay? This book right here is over your head. And when you get it, you're going to go, oh my goodness, he actually thinks I'm going to read that. This book, unless I gave this talk and you bought this book, I don't think you would read it. Okay? This talk was required, I think, to get most people to even consider, okay, I'm going to tackle that. I'm going to try. Because it's worth it. I want to convince you that it's worth it. And the analytical part of this, and that is I found a great book. I read it all the way through. Now what am I going to do? And it gives you this step-by-step process of reading it carefully and understanding what kind of book it is. And then interpreting all the arguments and all the words. And then coming to a, with critical thinking, knowing how do I process this and what kind of conclusions do I come to? And so that's why I wanted to do this whole session on this book, because it was transformational to me. I want to give it to my kids. And I think it's the most important skill. And this is something that our homeschool community and parents can do, so that when your kids come up to a door, they're not looking for a certain key. They're just going, skeleton key, I can unlock this book. I can unlock this knowledge. I can unlock this skill. I can do it because I know how. I know how to process this. Okay, so I just want to end with a little bit about how you can get more information about me and what I'm doing, and then we're done. Truth to Freedom, truthtofreedom.org. If that's all right, I was going to make that bigger, but I have a card up here too if you need it. Here's the passion and drive of my ministry. I want to help people live in intimacy with Christ, in victory over sin, and in powerful ministry. And that's what I write when I speak. That's what I mainly want to do. That's my drive. I do lots of audio recordings and teachings online and blogging. And so here's what I wanted to tell you about very quickly, and that is, you can sign up to get my updates, like email updates, and I want to tell you why. First of all, it's because if that kind of content interests you, then you're going to find those helpful. And I want to give you tools and encouragement for discipling your children and for helping educate them in these ways and to disciple yourself. Number two, we're putting on a marriage conference in Boone in March of 2017. And if you're on this list, you'll get the first information about that. It's going to be March 16, 17, and 18 in Boone. I'm going to be teaching it, and Truth to Freedom Ministry is going to be putting it on. And I want to help marriages to have peace and productivity, peace and purpose, okay, in the sense of having unity and a mission together. And so this is going to be a powerful weekend. I'd love for you to know about that. Number three. I am almost done. It's going to be published this year, writing a book called How to Love God, a Practical Discipleship Handbook. Okay, again, I just want for people to be discipled and for people to be able to disciple their children. And I keep running into people over and over who said, I love Jesus, And I want to walk with them, but nobody ever discipled me. I don't know. I don't know really how to pray or read the Bible or memorize scripture or discern God's will for my life. I'm not being taught. There's a huge vacuum of discipleship. And so I want parents to feel equipped to know, I know what to teach my children. And so that's what this book's for. It's coming out this year. And again, if you're on the email list, you'll get the first information about that. Last temptation for you to sign up for this email list. The three workshops that I gave at the other NCHE conferences are on there for free for you to download. Number one is how to stop the fighting in your home. That's one that I gave at a different conference here. Two is how to help your children become self-motivated. And three, 10 ways to help your children discern God's will for their lives. These are NCHE conference audios. You can have a free download of them. If you go to truthtofreedom.org and put your name and email in, then instantly when you press submit, a link will appear. If you click on that, it'll take you to a page, and you can save that link to that page, and you can go to it anytime you want, and you can download those audios for free. I just am trying to get connected, okay? I'm trying to get connected with people so that this message and this way of equipping people is getting out there. So that's my information. I have cards up here, and we're way out of time, aren't we? Okay, thanks.